Welcome to Life List, a birding podcast.
Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome. This is Life List, a birding podcast. I am George Armistead here with Molly Brown and Alvaro Jaramillo. Guys, what's going on?
Hello.
This feels like we're kind of getting the podcasting thing down. Like,
yeah.
The spiel's getting started and we've got our intro. It's good.
Yeah.
Season three.
Season three. It's starting to feel legit.
You know? Yeah, kind of is.
Right. And you sound like deeper voiced and more professional each time.
Well,
and I still sound really goofy when I listen to myself. I don't know.
Well, Al, you have always sounded goofy. I can promise you that. I am speaking to you today from a brand new microphone that I've been threatening to use for some time, but only today got it set up. So I'm hoping I sell silky smooth today, more so than usual.
I thought you were at the dentist. That contraption there was about to, do something. It's really fancy looking.
Yeah, well, I got a boom arm and everything. And the nice thing too is that now, like you, Al, at least I don't know what Molly's view is like, but I can now see out my window. I can see that my coneflower is really starting to pop. The oxeye sunflower is still going strong. The bee balm is going good. The swamp milkweed is really just starting to burst right now.
Now you're just showing off.
I'm just looking around and I'm so excited. I can even see my hummingbird feeder in the distance. So I can actually bird while I record. It's a brand new world.
Yeah, so we are getting the hang of this.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, if things get slow, you can always just say, hey, look, my own sunflower just did something.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the day where I get a yard bird while recording with you guys. That's going to be a good one when like a Western kingbird perches up on the wire or something even crazier than that.
That did happen to me, didn't? Wasn't it like prairie falcon or something that I?
Yeah, which I think you said you'd had once before.
Oh, right? Once before.
Yeah, I think it was. I think you said it was the second one you'd had for the yard, but I could be misremembering that.
I think it was second for the county, but maybe first for my yard.
Oh man,
I don't know. So
that would be true craziness.
Yeah, I got to check on that.
Yeah, do your diligence.
I know.
Yeah, I feel like while we're talking about accuracy, I should revisit some rather egregious mistakes that I have made. And thank you to the multitudes of you out there who have written to me to let me know about the things that I get wrong, which
nobody writes to Molly or myself.
Apparently not. Yeah.
I guess you don't get things wrong. I don't know.
Seems that way.
Yeah, George has the fan mail thing figured out.
Got a monopoly on the errata. Yeah.
Errata.
The errata. Yeah. So I have a few errata points here. One is that when I was talking about the white-winged dove the other day, it was not 100 miles an hour, but 70 miles an hour, 70. So that is a large difference, still very fast, but I was incorrect in my assessment. I don't remember how I did that math. I probably just was speaking off the cuff.
You were thinking kilometers, obviously.
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly it, Al. I meant to say kilometers. You know what? I actually think, now that you mention it, that it's entirely possible that I read kilometers and thought miles. And wow,
there you go.
I'm going to take it back.
That wasn't errata.
Yeah, it was not a mistake. That was not a mistake. That was
you misspoke.
We'll visit that on the next errata next time. That my error was not an error. I spoke an error when saying that I erred. Yeah. So anyway, that one. Glad we cleared that one up. Two other errors were pointed out, one by my friend Angela Detweiler, who mentioned that when I referred to thick-billed longspurs in our previous pod, that I did not refer to them as thick boys, and that is a real error. Thick boys, double C-B-O-I-S, for those that might struggle with the spelling. So I wanted to clear that up. Sorry, Angela. I appreciate the correction on that. Also, I mentioned my wife's singing voice. Kristen has corrected me that in the process of throwing her right under the bus for her Grateful Dead singing, she said that that I neglected to mention that her boisterous rendition of Broke Down Palace, I believe it was, the way that she started singing was that I actually commented that she'd hit the harmony perfectly. It was just that after that, it never happened again. But she did want me to point out that there was an initial bout of excellence. So anyway, that is not all of the errata.
There's more to come.
I'm going to keep it to those ones for now. Okay. So my apologies, my mistakes. There will be more.
It's a fun segment to start each episode.
Jeez. I'll be humbled repeatedly, you know, as if birding isn't humbling enough, you know.
How has George gone wrong now?
Mm-hmm. First it was the rock hound, and then it's, you know, I didn't know what a rock hound was. Been a steady.
See, I thought you were going to take back that bird that you counted that was not in Philly. I thought that's what your errata was. You were going to come clean, take that one back.
Nope.
Take off your, you know, Bob White.
Nope.
Those are separate emails.
I stand on firm ground. Although Tom and I, during our trip out west recently with some friends, had that conversation, and Tom definitely does not agree with me on my Bob White standpoint. But I continue to champion that I'm on solid ground there.
Uh-huh. Well, that's something.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the fan mail, I forget what you said in the last episode, George, that I edited that went out last week. Was it like kill your lawn or something like that?
Yes.
And how it should be on t-shirts? So we got a response for some pretty cool t-shirts from Crime Pays Botany Doesn't that says destroy your lawn. That was some fun fan mail.
I love that. It said, I'm trying to remember who sent that.
Zach Nett.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the t-shirt said, kill your lawn. Crime pays, botany does not.
Oh, yes. There you go.
And I've started getting email from Grateful Dead fans basically saying that I need to really listen and watch this or check this out and what have you. So I will keep an open mind, but I don't know. Some of those concerts are like 3 hours long.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot of investment.
Yeah, it's true.
You got to be like a hippie, you know.
Not to be not for the faint of heart, you know.
Yeah. I'm used to bands that do songs under a minute. I mean,
yeah, well, we got a lot of feedback on the Grateful Dead stuff. Yeah,
we did.
Know. Yeah. DC Bart got in touch with us, Molly. He was uh-huh. all about it. And quite a few folks were enjoying that. But, anyway, we appreciate the feedback, critical or otherwise. Thank you everybody for sharing stuff. It's really been fun. And
I just saw that the Eagles are on their farewell tour. There's a bird related band, and you know, I won't say anything about the Eagles because I probably would.
Wow, is that's another one of your not so favorite groups, huh?
Well, I mean, a lot of bands from those days kind of blend in together for me. They did not make much of an impact, but yeah,
I kind of liked the Eagles in the same way that I liked Billy Joel, like kind of against my will. I like them, but I think the last time they went on tour, like their tickets were like ridiculous. I forget how much it was, but it was like, I don't know, hundreds of dollars per ticket. And I was like, I'm not even going to think about going to that.
Here's a question, right? So we've got the Eagles. How many bird named bands are there? Taylor Swift.
There's
right?
The birds.
There's the birds.
Yeah.
There's got to be a lot. Shearwater. You ever heard of Shearwater?
Yeah. A lot of Shearwater was out of Austin. Is that right?
Yeah, that's out of range for a Shearwater, but I could buy it.
It might have been that they were got their start at South by Southwest or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that guy from the band has resurfaced in other ways in birding.
Yeah, he's an author, right?
I think that's right. Didn't
he just do a book with Chris Bell?
Yeah, he wrote the book on Caracaras.
Oh, no way.
Oh, that book. Yes.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to read that. The Most Remarkable Creature, I think it's called.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder, why did he call the band the Caracaras rather than the... Maybe they would have... He'd have to play Latin music, right?
Could be. Yeah,
that's
a very good point.
Lots of. But I wonder if there's some obscure bird names being used by bands that are not the classic ones. Well, Shearwater is actually pretty obscure,
the Middendorf's grasshopper warblers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. The Middendorf's grasshopper warblers, and the whatever, you know how the band, and the so-and-so. What would it be?
The Oleaginous Hemispingus Project.
Right. That's a good one. That's like I think Chris Benish would like them. That sounds like the kind of band that you like.
Probably has a good drummer,
Right, yeah. And it's like kind of, progressive rock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, the Oleaginous Hemispingus. The Paltry Tyrannolets.
There you go. I like
they're
that.
They're a little boy band. Mm-hmm.
The Satanic Nightjars.
The Satanic Nightjars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a metal band, obviously.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot to work with out there for the bands that are coming up and need a bird name just go to Birds of the World and find something cool right there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yesterday was kind of a big day in our annual calendar of, for North American birders.
I see what you're getting at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like always rolls around in early July. The AOS checklist supplement was released, and at the same time, as always, Michael Redder and the folks at the American Birding Association have issued a nice summary of that you can read on their website.
With
photos, with some nice imagery, even some sound recordings, I think, in some cases. Definitely photos, at least. I'm looking at it now. Yeah, I saw some spectrograms, but.
I just read on the internet that supplements are bad for you and you should avoid them.
Oh, really? That's all I eat?
So
I have a diet. The AOS, only supplements.
AOS supplements are really, really like problematic sometimes. They can make you sad. They can make you happy. Huh. They just all over this place. So watch it with the supplement intake.
This is hard science from Alvaro Jaramillo.
That it is.
Damn it, man. It's all I eat. Supplements.
Supplements.
Delicious. But
did you check it out? What are your thoughts? What'd you come to conclusions on based on what was done or not done?
I didn't actually look at all the proposals, so I don't know what wasn't done. I merely looked at the changes. And I liked seeing all these splits of the Caribbean birds. You mentioned that, I think, as well, Alan, one of your posts about seeing these islands getting more endemics each, which is nice.
Yeah. And I think it adds 4 brand new endemics to the entire Caribbean basin, right? So
they split the palm crows. Euphonias.
Yeah. And the Greater Antillean Nightjar and the Cuban Bullfinch. So each one of those gives you multiple new ones, right? I think 4 new ones, 4 or 5.
The Cuban Bullfinch has been split.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Cuban bullfinch, the ones on Grand Cayman are different now.
Okay.
That means that Grand Cayman gains an endemic because the ones that existed there are all extinct. Grand Cayman thrush. So it's now the
that's
only
actually a big deal for
endemic it has.
Yeah. Like, because people that care about such things will have to go there. To get that bird. That was going to be my next question was, I don't know if, like, you know, for a lot of people that have been to these places, these will be sort of escrow ticks, as they say, right? The armchair ticks, birds that they saw at the time, but weren't split at the time. So they, so they'll merely gain birds from having been there. But that was going to be my next question. I had not looked at this carefully enough to decide or to know whether there were any things that, like, you'd be like, oh man, and now I need to go back there to get that bird, or now I need to go to a new place to go get this thing that I thought I already had cleaned up. So Grand Cayman at the very least.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about the Caribbean in this instance.
And I think that depending on, you know, I don't know all the distributions, exact distributions of some of these birds in Hispaniola. So the island that divides up Dominican Republic and Haiti. Right. So two countries and one island. But Cuba gets three new endemics. While I think Dominican Republic doesn't get like in as many because it shares some with Haiti. Get what I'm getting at? So my guess is that Cuba could have climbed to like top of the endemic list within all of the islands in Caribbean. It was always sort of up there with Jamaica, I think, but now it may have like shot through. I have to look at the numbers, but you know, it's endemic rich, which you'd expect because it's big.
Yeah, I've got a few new birds to look for. I'm realizing I leave on Monday, just a few days from now, for Colombia and this split of Carmiole's tanager. Is a bird. I could actually get both birds in the split on this particular trip. I could get both Carmioles and Yellow Lord. I've seen Carmioles before. I don't know that I've actually seen Yellow Lord before. So that'll be one to look for. But I feel like we're burying the lead a little bit here. Because the headliner for North American birders, right, was that was it Nate Swick? Or I remember who wrote this in ABA that said, "Our long national nightmare is over." And this was in reference to what is now known as Western Flycatcher, and was once known as Western Flycatcher, but for a period that most would deem a bit too long was known as two species, Pacific Slope and Cordilleran Flycatcher. They are, again, one. I think everybody agrees everyone seems to agree that was the right decision, that it was a pretty flimsy split at the beginning at its start. So that's,
I would say, you know, it wasn't a flimsy split at the beginning based on what they knew. And then as people knew more, they were like, oh, they should have sampled here, here, and here, where they never sampled.
Right. It so sounded like they, it was a small part of what Northern California, where they had sampled.
Well, it was mostly in the U.S. and they didn't sample up into British Columbia, where they kind of joined together, and Alberta and so forth. Yeah, even part of Eastern Washington. So, yeah, that was the issue. Once people started looking up there, or those who knew those birds, what they called, like, they were like, it's not so clear cut up here. And then things started to unravel over the years.
Pretty quickly. Because there was no way to distinguish them in the field, really. There was some talk, I guess, that like the male positional note might differ between the two. I'm not even sure that was ever really solidified.
Yeah. I think it is if you compare Arizona to California. Like, I think they're pretty clear cut then. But it's like when you go up
look in
that
the middle.
Sort of horseshoe shape distribution, that it just became more and more muddy. So, yeah.
The biggest issue was I shouldn't say the biggest issue, but the biggest issue for folks in the East was that these birds stray routinely. And that when they end up in places like New Jersey or Pennsylvania or Massachusetts or Georgia, we never knew what species, quote unquote, we were dealing with. And you had people like, you know, Julian Huff in Connecticut was, you know, running around with a Ziploc bag, following this thing around, waiting for it to poop, you know, scraping a poop sample and then taking it into the lab for analysis. And then you had some more poop chasers, I know, for the one in New Jersey that showed up at the Magic Field in Cape May a few years ago and sent it into the Academy of Natural Sciences here for analysis. And, you know, they're that happily that stage of poop chasing and Pitanax may have finally come to a close. So that, yeah, that should be some sweet
those relief. Poop chasers were heroes at the time.
That's
now,
true.
They're just idiots if you start thinking about it. With a little bag, sorry, Julian. You know, we have to make a joke. But yeah, it's funny.
I think I have our title for this episode.
Poop chasers. Yeah. Pitanax, yeah, baggies.
That's a lump that results in a lot of new state birds for folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true, I was going to ask that. Yeah. You're right. So there must be a bunch of states that just have a Pacific Slope / Cordilleran on their list or not even on their list, right? That suddenly, boom, it becomes the real deal.
Huh. Yeah. No.
Wow.
It's sort of, to me, it made me think back about tundra taiga bean goose, which is one people have talked about that could be lumped again at some point. And you're shaking your head. You don't think so, Al?
No, I think it's complicated in that case. There's a person that studies them that deals with hybrid lineages and so forth in Europe. And it turns out that they're actually really well differentiated, but they had this hybrid event that mixed up the genes. So if you do certain types of analyses, they come out as very similar, and you do other analyses. And in fact, I think one of them, I want to say like the tundra one, is more closely related to pink-footed than it is
That's right.
to the taiga one. It's like a messy history. But if you start unraveling what probably happened and the gene exchange, you're like, that maybe those are pretty good.
You know? So they're different, but they had a hybrid event that complicates things from an identification standpoint.
Yeah, and from a genetic standpoint, like some genetic analyses like come out like, oh, these aren't that different. But others are like, oh, these are different.
You know, but
depending
on
what bit of the genes you're looking at and how.
What if you chase their poop? I bet that goose poop would be much easier to get than Empidemics poop.
Yeah. And just go to a golf course and.
Yeah. Yeah. Something to think about. You know, I'm just saying.
I know.
Yeah.
We should ask somebody with experience like Julian, see if.
Yeah. We got to get him on here about.
And he might need a bigger baggie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do wonder if I'm only half joking about the goose poop, because that actually would be easy to get if it would be helpful. I suspect it wouldn't be helpful for those two, but they present a similar problem when they show up out of range.
Yeah, I think if you look at the poop and if it has tundra in it versus taiga, you can identify them.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
the actual.
I was just thinking you're going to have to go through a lot of poop. You're going to have like 100 samples, and maybe they're easy to get, but you've got to find the right one.
The right one.
If it's got taiga, then you know.
Yeah.
Good to go.
Yeah. Actually, is this reindeer moss? Yeah.
Wow. That was a rabbit hole. I didn't see us going down. Well, one of the other things on the supplement was, I think, kind of a cool one that is really being embraced as well, is the split of northern goshawk into two species. So now we have Eurasian goshawk, Accipiter gentilis, American goshawk, Accipiter atricapilis. I gather there are a few records of Eurasian goshawk in North America. And they actually do look a little bit different. And it's kind of like, you know, seeing any goshawk anytime is an enormous treat and privilege. And it falls into that category of birds that I often like to say overreported and underreported at the same time. You get a lot of people that are overeager or think they know what a goshawk is reporting them incorrectly. And then you get a lot of people that are looking for birds, active birders, dedicated birders. And, you know, just by the nature of goshawks' habits and behavior can be tricky to identify at times because either you see them briefly or poorly, or they can be a little, they're more skulky than most other hawks. So I think they fly under the radar a lot of the time while also being over-reported by the overzealous. So it's always a privilege.
There was a famous overzealous over-reporter of northern goshawks.
There was and is, I think, right? Is he still with us? I don't really know. I haven't heard about said individual for some time.
Basically, every Cooper's hawk that was out there was re-identified as a goshawk online.
Yes.
And I remember people even wondered if this person was
real,
a real person,
or
if it was like a joke. Of some kind.
Sort of like a Kaiser Soze of the birding world, you know, like this, you know.
The who?
Well, I was thinking that movie, the Usual Suspects, where there's like this like legendary figure that nobody really knows if he's real or not. Sort of like that. maybe too obscure a reference, perhaps. But yeah, this guy I feel like fell into the same vein. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the I probably can mention that because, you know, I am on that ABA checklist committee. We suddenly sort of are in the situation of today thinking, oh, maybe we have to analyze those records of reported, you know, Eurasian goshawk, and also the house martins, because they were separated. There's four species now of house martins. One of them was separated into Western and Siberian. So we can have Westerns in the Atlantic, Siberians in Alaska, but who knows, with something that's that mobile, you could get, you know, like situation like redneck stints on the Atlantic or little stints on the Pacific kind of deal. It's worth kind of reassessing, making sure that those IDs are correct to species and see.
Yeah, that could be a tricky one. I would think that could be tricky depending, because those can be tough to get photos of. Often the documentation of those might not be of the quality one might hope for.
Right. Yeah. And the goshawk, I wonder if it may be a specimen, you know, from Newfoundland, one of them. So that should be doable. But I think it throws an open question into, like, you know, do we have the right data at this point in time? And some of it might have to go to state level committees first. I guess Alaska would have to deal with any house martin now and kind of go, okay, let's reevaluate these and see if we can actually assess which one of them it was. So a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Do you want me to tell you one of my favorite things that happened in this supplement that maybe others haven't thought of, or maybe it doesn't strike them as a... This is little tiny hawk out there.
Oh, even the goes by hawk. The name of...
Tiny hawk,
there
right?
It is.
And it's one of the best names for a bird, because I've seen it once in Bolivia, and I remember looking at it and going, man, that's one heck of a little tiny hawk. And then it was like, oh, bing.
Every now and then they get them right, you know.
They get them right, you know. Yeah. Like, you don't have to look for the red belly on this one, you know, and or the ring on the neck. But this tiny hawk is an accipiter. It's been considered an accipiter for the longest time. It's like a little tiny, like you could have sharpshin and you made it even tinier. And in fact, it's in a completely different group of raptors related more closely to species that are in the old world. And therefore, I'm not sure if it was a new genus was created or an old genus was resurrected for it. And then there's another.
Microspecies, yeah. The new genus.
Right. And that's in North America. There's another member of this genus now in South America too. But I thought that was really cool. Like the fact that it may be another raptor that crossed at some point between the old world and the new world and sort of separated out here. And it's happened multiple times in raptors. Like if you look at the phylogenies and the fact that we kind of assumed it was an occipiter because it's got the little long tail and the whole thing, but it really is something different.
Yeah.
That was kind of eye-opening and interesting to me.
Yeah, that's a cool bird. If one of those appears, like really anywhere within their range, and if one of those appears, people get excited. Because it is a really neat little raptor. And the other one in that genus, Al, is the semi-collared hawk, which is a pretty rare bird to see in South America. I've actually been lucky enough to see that once in the Merida Andes of Venezuela. John Coons and I were leading a trip up there once, and we saw one beautifully with our group. It would have been in the early 2000s, I guess. And that's the only one of those I've ever seen. But I've seen probably a handful of tiny hawks in the canal zone of Panama, where I expect probably more people have run into them there than just about anywhere else. But.
And it is sort of like not a very common species, but this applies to multiple raptors in the tropics, in the New World tropics. It seems to be, if you're somebody who like rifles through the bird book, and you know, especially if you had the old school Birds of Venezuela or something, you used to look through that or other places, and there were multiple raptors that you'd say, oh, I can't wait till I see that. And you're probably still 20 years later thinking, can't wait till I see that, because there are multiple things that are so unusually kind of low density in the raptor world, more so than a lot of other species, I think, especially because raptors, you think of them as being kind of visible in. At least from a northern perspective, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's true.
How many forest falcons have you seen in the book that you haven't seen yet in real life?
Or how many times have I heard slaty-backed forest falcon versus how many times have I seen it? The answer to that is zero times have I seen it. I've heard it probably on almost every trip I've done to Central, well, at least Panama, where I've done 8 or 9 trips. I think I heard it there every single time, yet to see it.
Yeah. No, it's, there are, and if, you know, just still talking about the proposals, there are a few things that weren't separated, like the green jay from the sort of the blue and the green jay.
Is this the Inca jay from the green jay?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, there were the Perula, tropical Perula. There was a multiple, you know, there was sort of a thought there that there were some in Mexico. They weren't split. The hepatic tanager was not split. There are several others, and they do mention that the scrub jay proposal. So to split another species off the scrub jay is postponed. So they didn't not do it. They're postponing because they want to do a comprehensive blah 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 proposal on the scrub jay complex. So there's that. And ochre oriole was not separated from orchard. Cowbird, you know, the bronze cowbird, and there's the bronze brown cowbird down in Colombia, Venezuela. It was not separated. There's a lot of stuff.
Do you think those two, those cowbirds should be separated?
I don't know, actually. Kind of, that's really on the fence. Yeah. But
because bronze brown has a pretty restricted range. I think it's basically endemic to Colombia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe into Venezuela, barely.
Yeah. It hits Venezuela a little bit. But I do think the caciques, the subtropical and, you know, cacique and the, you know, Scarlet Rumped, they weren't separated. I'm kind of surprised about that. I think it was pretty, but so a lot of stuff that did not happen. And one lump didn't happen. This is kind of interesting one, right? The three-toed, American three-toed woodpecker was not lumped with European or Eurasian.
I felt like they only split that yesterday.
I know, but some people out there, you know, are trying, you know, they don't want to let things be.
Sort of like Cordillera and fly.
Right. And the stilts too. There was a proposal to shift around the stilts. I forget how that was.
You mean within the family or to actually make multiple species?
I don't know if it was lumping or splitting there in that case. I don't remember, but they didn't do anything. They didn't change it. So right now all the, you know, the black neck stilt still continues to be black neck stilt. Yeah.
Boy. Interessante.
Yeah. Interesting. Is that what you said in Spanish?
Yes, indeed.
I don't know. I do think it's interesting, though, how riled up people get over some of this stuff, though. You know?
Yeah.
And you can't help it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I often, obviously, some of us, this is, you know, birding and birds are what we do and how we make our living. But, and for those of us that do, we ended up there because it's something we really care about, typically. And, but then there's, you know, for multitudes, it's not a profession, but a passion. I don't make a habit of quoting Henry Kissinger, but I think his quote was, you know, university. No, he's not the best at all. But he had this quote where he said, university politics are vicious precisely because the stakes are so small. And I sometimes feel I've extended that to bird clubs at times where you just see these knock down, drag out, vicious arguments. And you just think, is this really worth it? Like, we're talking about birds here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, George, you're the most sports oriented, I think, out of us three. I feel like there's an element of the AOS. It's like the refs, you know what I mean? Like, and we all get, it doesn't matter who you are, if you're pro or not pro, you get to, in a sense, assess if it was a good call or a bad call. And sometimes it seems really clear to the public that this was a bad call. Sometimes it's really clear to the public it was a good call. But, you know, I sort of see it that way. And we all have an opinion. It's like, I should have done this. I should have done that. You know, why is it taking them so long to do A or B or C? It's like, it's almost like the ref in the sports world.
Yeah. Hey, something you said kind of triggered something I'd heard about.
Did I trigger you?
You triggered me, man. And frankly, I am not upset about it at all. But have you ever seen that there's, I just checked an eBird. I'd heard, I didn't know about this, but there's, looks like 7 different observations of yellow-rumped caciques from Florida.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. But I imagine there are releases, right?
Yeah. All the photos appear to be from one location, but from what I understand, there's more than quite a number. And it sort of kind of was drawn a parallel with like the yellow-headed caracaras that have started to turn up in various parts of the U.S. It's sort of like, what's happening here? Anyway, we probably shouldn't go down that rabbit hole without doing a little more digging, but food for thought.
Well, I can tell you that yellow-rumped caciques did not get here on their own.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah, I think
leave the possibility open that a caracara could.
Well, sure. I mean, I think those yellow-headed caracaras are coming. Seems like to me, but
I don't think a cacique would be my top choice for a pet bird.
No,
you could teach them to talk. That's really
yeah.
That's something, right?
Like, yeah.
Close the door. Close the door. You know, teach them like really. So everybody comes in, you know, to your house and it's like,
take off your shoes.
Tell them to close. Take off your shoes. You know, that'd be great. You know, teach it to tell jokes.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask Molly Brown about was your recent run out west.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a slightly extended run out west. That wasn't a birding trip, but I have two younger brothers. One graduated high school the year that I graduated college. So together we went out to, we went into Bozeman and then just went to Lake Yellowstone and just did a sibling trip together. I have a much younger brother who just graduated high school this year. So this was a trip. He, had not really been out west. He'd not been that far west at all. Honestly, he's never really been on a vacation before.
That's cool.
I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast. Yeah. My family has cattle, several hundred head. So I come from the beef cattle life, and he was very concerned about getting away during hay season, but he has a pretty adventurous girlfriend, so she came too, and we just went out and did like a classic American national parks road trip. We flew into Denver and spent pretty much the whole time in Wyoming, except for United flight cancellations. We ended up spending a few days in Denver at the end waiting to come back home. But yeah, it was really, really fun. I, would typically not choose to go to like those parks at what was probably the busiest week of the year for them.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. It's probably crazy there now, right?
Yeah, it kind of was. Well, yeah. So it seemed pretty crazy. Not that I have a ton to go on for, you know, areas like that. But also I realized that I haven't spent a lot of time with my brother, like a week straight. I didn't really know what he would want to do kind of wanted to, I was really like shooting for big mammals, like, you know, pretty scenery that is a lot different from here, that sort of thing, which worked out quite well. Yeah. But that did mean that we were hitting a lot of the sort of highlight spots throughout the parks. And it was honestly just fine.
That's awesome.
Yeah. A couple things. We went to like Old Faithful and watched that, and there was a huge crowd for that. But otherwise, like it was manageable.
Yeah.
It rained a little bit and like half the crowd just took off. And it was like so they post a schedule there because it's, you know, reliably erupts. And it was like 10 minutes later and people were so upset. That was kind of toward the end of the trip. So, we were all a little tired of that by then too, but then we ended up having a little bit of space between a drizzle and a 10 minute delay. But yeah, I still picked the routes based on eBird reports for nice. A lot of it. So that worked out for me. Yeah, I haven't done much birding, really any like dedicated birding, in that part of the country either. So I had some stuff to see and it was kind of nice to stick with East Coast time. So I was up super early and just kind of getting out and doing things on my own a little bit. So that was nice too. And, yeah, it was a really fun trip.
That's awesome. Did you get, what were a couple, bird highlights and a couple mammal highlights?
Ooh, I got a couple life birds for myself on the trip. Went out, not for life birds, but one thing I've really wanted to see forever is just Wilson's phalarope on their breeding grounds. So mm-hmm. we spent our first night in Laramie, and I just went out and drove roads for a couple hours and was just seeing like breeding shorebirds and that sort of thing. That oh man,
those prairie breeding shorebirds really are juicy. They are fun to watch.
Yeah, shorebirds are some of my favorite anyway. So that was probably my highlight birding day, was just getting started. And oh, it was just a taste of wanting to get a lot more of that. So thinking about probably next year, I guess, at this point. But would really like to spend some dedicated time out that way. Mammal highlights. I did feel kind of bad for my brother and his girlfriend because they wanted to sleep in and they were okay with that, but I was seeing a lot of stuff without them. And I think it was my last full day in Wyoming, which wasn't anything crazy mammal-wise, but I just kind of went out to a road that I'd scouted a bit, and it was just past where they'd like closed it off for construction for the week, and just spent a morning by myself in a pond with a couple moose and elk were kind of passing through, and Tetons were in the background, and it was just a really, really pleasant morning to be out like before the sun, just sitting and watching. Yeah. And I know you spend a lot of time out there. You were out there.
Not as much in Wyoming, but in, Montana.
Yeah, but I see why those tours are so popular.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Whew. I mean, it's a beautiful part of the world.
It really is.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. I don't know. It's a funny feeling to me because I don't feel like I'm in my element. Like, it's not like the hills around here.
But not enough trees for you?
it's like flat and then there's a big hill, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's really, really cool. I really like experiencing that. And I was there like driving around thinking I get why so many people are here who have all varying degrees of interest and attention spans in nature, because if anything's going to keep your attention, it's scenery like this.
Yeah. Now you go out there and spend a little bit of time, and it's like people are flooding in there in terms of like residents, you know, like the population. Everybody knows that, you know, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, mm-hmm. like it's pretty. It's a beautiful part of the world. The winters can be a little grim, but you know, there's still cool stuff to do then if you like winter. But yeah, it is really nice out there, and I love it as well. So that's awesome. And yeah,
it's a great area.
To get to take your kid brother on a trip where he really hasn't traveled much before, and to see that part of the world.
No, he really hasn't.
Yeah.
We had a really good time.
That's awesome.
It was fun. Yeah, it was just a lot of, you know, we spent a ton of hours on the road and just driving around too. We based in Jackson for the bulk of the trip, and the Grand Tetons are, I don't know, a 30-mile stretch of road just north of that, and then Yellowstone's immediately after that. So we spent like a whole day just driving through Yellowstone. So lots of time in the car just to listen to music, talk about stuff. It was funny to like know what memories he has of things that we did when we were younger that I barely remember that stood out to him, and vice versa. So we had a lot of fun catching up. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
A book that I recommend for folks that are interested in that part of the world, Alex Harper turned me onto it. And my dad, I'm actually reading it now. My dad, I gave it to him first to read, is American Serengeti, The Last Big Animals of the Great Plains. And it's about the recent extinction of basically it draws parallels between that part of the country and the Serengeti of, of East Africa and how there were so many big animals. And what I think people don't necessarily understand is that things like short-faced bears and ground sloths and all these kind of legendary animals didn't go extinct that long ago. I think it's like between 8,000 and 13,000 years ago, these animals really just vanished as people colonized, I think, largely across the Bering Land Bridge. So at any rate, that's a book I'd recommend. Just wanted to point that out. It's a really fascinating look. It's by Dan Flores. And it's called American Serengeti, The Last Big Animals of the Great Plains. So check that out. Another thing I wanted to ask you, Molly, because I started following this Instagram account. It was recommended to me by my friend Angela. She was like, you got to check out, it's called Taurons of Yellowstone. Taurons being a hybrid word of tourists and morons. And it's like, I don't think anything has made me sort of cringe, scream, and laugh, and like you know, bitter anger, frustration, and you know, and just sort of you know, a comedic element to it because people are just doing such ridiculous stuff. You know, I don't want to oversell it, but you just see people. It's you see people getting way too close to animals, just like not respecting the distance of these animals, or in some cases, like at Yellowstone, because the Instagram account, it's called Taurons of Yellowstone. It actually covers a greater area. It has videos from you know like Jasper and Banff in Canada and the Grand Tetons and Rocky Mountain National Park. So it's basically people getting too close to wildlife in national parks. A lot of the material is from Yellowstone. You see people just like taking selfies right next to buffalo, right next to bison. You know, like. You know, selfieing it up, fixing their hair, making sure they have quite just the right angle. And you think, man, at any second, this thing could go off. It sounds like you mostly avoided seeing anything too dramatic in that regard. But as soon as I think of Yellowstone now, I think, oh, man, it would almost be just as entertaining to watch the people acting like crazy people as it would be to look for the animals.
Yeah, I think you can kind of choose your mindset that you go into that and see. Yeah, we didn't see anything too ridiculous. I've seen a lot of that stuff on my social media since being out there too. I heard just a lot of conversations that were pretty entertaining throughout the week. And it like I said, typically that's not my scene. But right. But it was fun and it was good to see.
Well, it is a magnificent place. The people act crazy there, but that shouldn't detract from the what a special place, Yellowstone Glacier, those places.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Hey, George, you were in close to there in the Canadian side, weren't you? Just now in Alberta. What was that like?
I haven't heard
a thing.
I departed from that area on Canada Day.
And wow.
Yeah. So it was a group of us friends with Tom Johnson and some others. And we went out there to enjoy the wildlife of that region and the birds. And just, we basically were like, none of us have ever been there. Let's go check this area out. And so we went and did some birding there. We did go to Banff, National Park, which is, you know, a place I've heard of for years. We had a little snafu with one of the vehicles that slowed us down a little bit that day, but we still got to see a good chunk of the park and see some cool stuff. We didn't really see any big mammals that day. We did have a nice at one spot where we had like 12 black swifts rocketing around all together, which is, I don't think I'd seen that bird since I was like 13 or something. Like I'd seen the Caribbean black swift in Puerto Rico maybe 10 years ago, but I hadn't seen black swifts in North America for a really long time. So that was awesome to have like a dozen of them rocketing around pretty close. Got to kind of see what appeared to be males and females. Some looked really black. Some looked scaly underneath. Some had little patches of white in the throat or the vent that we kind of surmised were females. And so that was cool. We also had two different nights where we had at least five individual great gray owls. And that was pretty epic. I'd only ever seen those birds once before. They pretty much acted like we didn't exist, like great gray owls do. They really don't key in on people much a lot of the time, which is why you have to be careful with them sometimes. But we got to commune with them. So that was really, really cool. We got to hear yellow rails. We got to see a flight display of Leconte sparrow, which is not something I even knew existed. So it was a fun group and of friends just birding for fun and a beautiful area, an area I'd really like to go back to. So yeah, it was wonderful birding in and around Calgary. It was really nice. So yeah, thanks for asking about that, Al. It's true. I hadn't really given you the rundown on that. And now, Al, I also wanted to ask you, because you mentioned, I saw on your social media that you were mentioned before we got on here, before we started recording, that you have been speaking pretty much all day today in one form or another, like on on Zoom of or similar platforms.
And one of the coolest things I did yesterday was there's this program of speakers in Chile, you know, that talk about various different topics, and people sign up and they actually have to pay. So like entry to listening isn't kind of a free event. And then they, you know, you'll have multiple workshops and it'll be about literature or some people, it's, you know, talk about, you know, politics, what have you. And they're this sort of, the concept is that it's a way for people to learn more in detail about things that happen that relate to Chile and culture, right? So they actually asked me to talk about birds. And it was fascinating because, first of all, I thought maybe at the most like 20 people would show up, but they had over 150 people listening, you know, about birds. And the first one I did was basically why birds, like what's so special about birds and why they're the nature sort of ambassadors. And then later, you know, next one I'm going to do is more about diversity of birds in the country and what makes it special. And then, you know, and a little bit about how to become a birder. But the questions and the participation was really interesting. I mean, it ranged from this one kid who was 9 years old, you know, and he was showing me like the bird book that we wrote and how he's just so into it and just wanted to say hi. And it was wild. Like you just this level of connection to all these people are using sort of your thing, you know, that you kind of created and they're having great time with it. To real questions of some of the similar things we ask here about, you know, when we're taking somebody to see something that is unusual or uncommon or endangered, are we better off? Are we making an impact that's positive towards that bird by seeing it? Or are we doing a negative because we're there looking at it and somehow having an effect? And those were interesting questions, right? Like, you know, if you have a window, an eye, a camera on the world that's happening, things can't happen in the dark, right? There's an element of that. And often these birds are in areas where there's all sorts of other things going on that are much more important in terms of their habitat loss than a few people walking around with cameras. So it was interesting to get all these people together talking about birds in Spanish, in Chile, me from here. It was such an odd, like, amazing kind of thing, you know, like to me, it's like, I cannot believe I just did that. You know, it's like that I was part of this kind of cool deal, you know, and that there's so many birders out there all over the world, each day, more and more of them. And that was probably much more, that was kind of highlight this week.
When you chatted about the why birds are ambassadors, did you chat about it from like what, I'd be curious, like, was it why birds are interesting to people? Like why they attract people's attention, or was it more like, it was more that than, kind of why, you know, they serve as, you know, canaries in the coal mine kind of thing.
I think there was a little bit of both, but I got into the science too of being in the moment and how important that is for people's health and happiness. And that there's research that's been done on older people. Older people are not thinking about the future as much. They're thinking about today and they're thinking about joyful things. Younger people tend to think about the future and, you know, what happens after I get my degree? What happens? Will I get married? Will I do this? Will I have a house? You know, all these future things. So they're constantly in this state of thinking about other things that aren't happening right now. And happiness, often, like, you know, all those concepts of meditation are about like being in the now.
Right.
And birds also take us right there. It's really impossible to be trying to figure out if you're seeing a juvenile redneck stint versus a little stint versus a semi-palmated sandpiper without just being in the now.
Right, being present in that moment.
You're present, exactly. And that gives you joy.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing to contemplate identification as a source of meditation, but it is. Like, it totally is. And I've come to understand that now, sort of older and wiser. So I think birds offer you these opportunities to, A, get outside. They're beautiful. They sing. They fly. They're colorful. You know, they're out in the day. They're all over the place. And they give you ways to have joy in your life that's way more than you think could ever be possible. But if you're a non-birder and somebody describes to you, hey, you know, birding's really great. It's fun. It's amazing. You'd be like, I don't know, man. Then you do it and you're like, whoa, this is deep, yeah. Big stuff that's happening while you're watching birds.
Right.
So I was trying to communicate that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. To communicate some of that. So.
Wow. That's very cool. If I wasn't leaving in 2 days, I would totally have tried to figure out how to tune in on that and see if test my Espanol a little bit.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I got to say, the other thing, I told you guys about this yesterday. I was so nervous before that.
Oh, I'd have paid good money to see you before you went on, man. That would have been good stuff.
Yeah. I was, you can imagine, you know.
Butterflies.
Like, I'm like a diva, you know. Where's my Browns?
Throwing water bottles M&Ms, at people. Yeah.
You know, throwing water bottles. Yeah. You know, it's like, the chandelier is not correct on my piano. You know, it's like. All those things, throwing a fit. But I was just nervous because I didn't quite know what to expect. I didn't know if I was going to talk the right talk to that audience. And it's in Spanish. And although I'm fluent in Spanish, I don't use it every day. So I know I have an accent in Spanish, you know, that Chileans detect. So it's really hard to talk in a sense and feel like you're 100% making sense. I mean, I don't think I make sense in English, so let alone in different.
No, second Spanish, that. So, yes.
Yeah. So I was really nervous, and it turned out fine. I should, but you know, there's some aspect of it that I think if you're not nervous, it means you don't care.
And sure.
So I feel like that's a you know, it's good to have some nervous, but this was beyond the norm.
Yeah. Nice. Like, well,
butterflies.
I'm sure you crushed it. that's very cool. And you've got a couple more coming up, so that's mm-hmm. great.
Two more opportunities to fail. So yeah.
Hey, you know, you gotta put yourself in those positions, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we should think about wrapping up here, guys, because we are coming up on the hour here, even a little bit beyond. Al, is there anything else you wanted to let folks know about before we sign off here?
Well, Pelagic trips are ongoing still, you know, all the way through to October. So alvarezadventures.com. And I'm going to be talking at the Southwest Wings Bird Festival in the first week of August. I think it's Thursday, August, something like 2nd or 3rd. Yeah. So if you're in Arizona, in Sierra Vista, come on down and enjoy some birds, enjoy some bird talk.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool. I also, Molly, I wanted to make sure folks know that they can travel with you coming up.
Oh, yeah.
In early 2024 here. Go to the hillstarnature.com site and check out international departures. You'll see in February 2024, Molly's got two trips, one through the Central Andes, High Times in the Cordillera Central, and one to the Choco and the Western Andes. And you'll be co-guiding with our friend Yesenia, who I'll actually see in probably a week's time here. I'll be co-guiding with her as well coming up. So folks should definitely check that out. I also wanted to remind people to check out my India Jewels of Gujarat trip, which is in early February 2024. We'll be going for Asiatic lions. We'll be exploring the Thar Desert. We'll be we go into Gir National Park, the Ron of Kutch, looking for rare animals. I mentioned the lions. There's Indian onager, striped hyenas possible, black buck, a host of cool, interesting mammals that would be often difficult to encounter elsewhere, as well as some really cool birds like crab plover and hypocoleus, and just a big wetland spectacle in places there, and some cool desert birds, including this harrier roost, which is supposedly sometimes numbers in the hundreds, sometimes even four figures, which I cannot even imagine. Three species of harriers. So hopefully we'll have some luck with that. But check out hillstarnature.com if you want to check out our mailing list. I know each of us have those mailing lists for people to check out. Great. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We will be back again soon. Y'all have a great day.
Bye-bye.